Welcome, everyone, to tonight's episode of Pivotal Change. I'm your host, William Kahn, and we have got a very special guest tonight. As you know, this is a show that's all about leadership, executive coaching, anybody that has or wants to grow their influence and make a bigger impact on those around them in the world. Get your pen and paper ready because we got some good wisdom from Carlos Martin. He is an executive coach. He spends a lot of time in the C-suite and he helps a lot of people. He is also the host of Leadership Evolving, and that is a show that is hosted by Continuum Leaders, his company. He is a Hudson certified coach and consultant, and he does a lot of work with entrepreneurs, senior leaders, and really dives deep into powerful self-reflection. So we're going to talk about a lot of what he does and how it makes your pivotal change to success a much easier path. Carlos, welcome to the show.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Thanks for being here, or thank you for having me, rather.
Yes, it's my pleasure. And I don't know if you caught that, but I always have my audience watch with pen and paper in hand so they can capture all those nuggets of wisdom you're going to drop on us.
Oh,
And so
fantastic.
the one thing that I'm hoping that we can answer tonight is how people are leading with clarity, if they're an executive, a leader, or a team head of some type, and that they're always asking what's next. So what I'm going to do is jump straight into this question. When senior leaders, a lot of people that you deal with, are asking what's next, what are they usually wrestling with beneath the surface when they ask that question?
All right, you went right for the jugular. I love that.
That's right.
I usually have that on my hero banner on my website. What's next? Because that's probably the number one thing that I get. I think it's a fantastic question, but capital BUT, I feel like there's a lot of work that needs to be done in the back end, because I think a lot of people go into what's next, and that's more of an analytical, let's put a plan together. And what I try to do is I try to slow them down a little bit and say, bring some clarity on what my client wants before to do the what's next, right? So instead of doing, let's go inside a little bit and see what you want as my client, because doing is easy, at least for me and most of us. Let's put a strategy together, a plan of attack, no problem. But really, what we want, maybe there's something different that we want to do. And that's probably the struggle that I see. But now, how do we look inward to see what really, next is? But once we have a better idea of that clarity, or for them, it's not about me, the coach, or my clarity, right? It's about my client.
I like that a lot. So you get what I'm just going to call eager beavers, and they're wanting to say, okay, check that box. What's next? Check that box. Where do we go? Who do we talk to? What do we build? And you literally said, we're going to pump the brakes a little bit. In order to make sure we know what's next, we got to look inside. You got to examine that leader, the process, and your clients, the people you're coaching and consulting. You have to really make sure they understand themselves with clarity. And does that ever come to a time where, like, you see people starting to struggle to admit that maybe this executive is not feeling fully aligned with what their original vision, the mission is, anything like that? Is there alignment issues when people start to examine themselves, like you're asking?
Oh, absolutely. I see it all the time, right? I don't have a formula that I throw at all my clients and make sure 1 + 1 = 2, right? It's whatever they, I try to meet my client where they are. But the reality is, yes, we try to go. I love your terminology, that eager beaver, right? They want to go right into doing, because that's kind of what we are kind of bred to do, especially in corporate environment. Like, let's go. But again, is how do I slow them down? And to answer your question, do I see that a lot? Yeah, I see it probably often, maybe not 100% of the time, but probably if I were to quantify it, maybe in the 90%, where
Wow.
they don't know. The funny thing is, when they come to me, when they find me, they're really good at telling me what they don't want. But when I ask them, what is it that you want? They're like, I'm not sure. That's what I hired you. And so it's really easy to say what's next, or to ask what's next, excuse me. But what the reality is, when I ask them, they have most of the time, they have no idea.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think you're right that that does point to a lack of alignment and a vision that can be executed on. So you walk them into some self-reflection as you were getting into. What does that self-reflection look like for an entrepreneur or an executive who is just really used to moving fast and just solving problems?
Yeah. I mean, it looks like I said earlier, that they all come to me in various different chapters, different awareness. So my job is to really listen to them as much as I possibly can. My thing is to create that space, a place of no judgment, to really, for them to open up. Well, opening up, that could be a little tricky because some people are really good at talking about feelings, emotions, about vulnerability, where they are. And other people are not. Either A, they don't know how, they don't feel comfortable, or they don't know. So my job is just to take off the layers, kind of like your armor out there in the back. My job, sometimes I get clients just like the individual behind you, and sometimes that's really difficult. So that takes a little bit longer to do, not impossible, at least not in my experience. And there's some people that are a lot more ready, and they come with a lot more awareness, maybe not all the answers. So how do we start to go a little deep and peeling that, the onion back little by little?
I like what you just said, the onions. I was going to make a Shrek joke about onions have layers, and so you led me right into that. So that's, yeah. That's good. But yeah, I think a lot of people are a lot more ready than others. I've done a bit of coaching and consulting in my day, and I find a lot of people say, hey, come fix my systems or come fix my team. And I always have to look at them. I was like, well, the first thing I got to do is fix you. So if you hire me, you really want me to step in. We're going to work on you first. And as you said, a lot of people are receptive to that much more than others. And, I think sometimes, as coaches and consultants, we say, hey, this leader does have a lot of really good things going for him, but sometimes they do just need a new set of eyes to say, here's the next step, here's the tweak to your strategy. So how can a leader maybe in their own way or an own system or something taught to them tell the difference between when they need a new strategy or they just need to keep digging deeper personally and do some type of reset?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because a lot of times we don't know that we have a problem, or we don't know that we're not aligned. That's where I think tools like, let's say a 360, I do LCP 360 interviews with my clients, and that really gives them a different lens. What I love about the 360, it gives them kind of an analytical report, then we could then take that and then bring the humanity back into the workplace to say, is there alignment or is there not? But to answer your question is, how do they know? A lot of times the scary part, they have no idea. But how does that show up? Maybe the attrition rate, maybe, their stakeholders, like there's something off. They might not call it misalignment, but they're like, hey, I'm just not feeling my team right now. The morale is low. I feel like just my team is not behind me. So those are the things that we look at, how much of an effective leader. Anybody can call themselves a leader now, but how of an effective leader are you? So having these tools, if we are a little lost or don't have the awareness or really don't know, having these tools to give us that data really, really helps.
Yeah, I like that. I'm a huge fan of relying on tools. I think some of them can be overdone, or we can over rely on tools. Yep. But, let me know if this is fair. If you get going through your regular life, most people out there are, rarely do we do the more important things. Do we ever get somebody that has a marriage expert? Do you go get your marriage checked on? Do you go get your parenting checked on? Do you go get your business leadership checked on? And when you feel like something is off, are you going to people like you that have tools, are coaches, and deal with this every day to get yourself checked? And so you have this 360 assessment. It can really help people dial that in and realize that, okay, I need to make some personal changes, or no, I have a broken cog in the system and I can just make a technical change. Is that kind of the mindset?
Yeah, I mean, isn't it kind of funny when we have an issue, we go and see that specialist? Not that I'm a specialist, right? But when we have an issue, okay, you have your kid that wants to go in baseball, like, what do? You get a coach,
right?
Or you get a therapist if you have something a little bit deeper. Or if you want to learn AI, what do? Like, okay, you get certified. Whatever it is that you're doing, you go and get a tool, talk to an expert, talk to a coach. The other day I did a workshop or kind of a talk. It was around 350 people. And then I did a poll, and whoever's gotten executive coaching, and only 30% have ever had gotten executive coaching. So that was my thing is, okay, what is it? Are we not investing in ourselves, or we do not see it as an investment? But the reality is somehow, if we want to tweak the mentality, the narrative, the identity, the philosophy, we kind of want to do it on our own. Why not have someone? Again, right. We're going to remove the expert out of the way, but someone you could kind of bounce some ideas and give you maybe my thing is, how can I give you, my client, a different perspective, a different filter? And then you could say, huh, you know what? I've never really thought about it that way. I really like that. And then you start to little by little change your approach.
I like that. So just a couple of seconds for an answer, but is this getting to having your person say, who do I need to become next? And they're making those changes internally more than just what I need to do next. Is that a foundational piece for you?
Yeah, it's kind of like how we started. Everybody's on what's next, what's, you know, do, opposed to let me slow down. What kind of person do I want to be and become so I could go and do? So we almost kind of have it. I'm not saying we have it backwards, but there's times to be doing and there's times to be being, and again, to look inward.
Well, that's a perfect time for us to put the pin in the conversation. We're going to cut to a commercial break. We're going to be right back with more Carlos and a fantastic conversation on how you can become a better leader on Pivotal Change right after this. We are back from the break. Thank you for sticking with us. And we're going to be continuing this amazing conversation with Carlos in just a second, but I want to make sure that you know where to find the show and all the others just like it. You can go to Now Media TV. That is the internet website. You can find it also on iOS or Roku. You can download the app. You get bilingual programming at nowmedia.tv. You can find Pivotal Change in all of your favorite shows. You can even find Carlos and some of our buddies on there. You can get culture, entertainment, business, news, leadership, everything at your fingertips, and there's a podcast option too. So if you're traveling and can't look at a screen, you can listen to all of your favorite types of programming. So Carlos, welcome back from the break. We're going to jump in to kind of theming this little segment before we reach the halfway point about people first. And people first is something that you've made statements about. You really drive home. So when you're talking about people first, it's like bringing humanity back into the workplace. What do you think believers need to understand most about that?
Well, I think in my experience, we're not in the Jack Welch days anymore. He's the president of General Electric, where we kind of led by fear, right? If you don't like the way that things are going, we're going to fire you or you could just leave. And that just doesn't work anymore. It's just not effective. It's not sustainable. So now the new workforce that's coming in, they're not going to tolerate that. They're going to go somewhere else. And I'm not saying that, you know, that the new generation can take a hard conversation, but they have values on, they're not going to tolerate, or they're going to look again at a different place. So as leaders, how do we bring the humanity back into the workplace? So what does that mean to me is really treat people like people, right? And to be able to say, hey, when was the, you know, how was the weekend, or really, you know, seek to understand, have curiosity about that individual as a human being, not an ROI or as a KPI. And I know I'm oversimplifying it. Why? Because it is that simple. It's just to have a relationship with your peers. There's so many times that I talk to my clients and they're complaining, maybe not the word complaining, but they're misaligned with their stakeholders. And I ask them about their team. And guess what? They don't know their team. So how can they build the trust? How can you really ask someone to go and bat for you and to work those extra hours or really grind? And if you haven't really make that effort to build that trust or that relationship, that's really unfair. And I think that is a huge disconnect that we have in the workforce.
I like everything that you just said, and I do not think it's overly simple. I think it's something people need to hear, like the repeated beating of a drum. You know, I really emphasize servant leadership, and of course, to be a servant is to be caring for others. And a very good business coach friend of mine says, do you know the names of the spouses and the children of all of your direct reports, right? So if you go out there and you lead a team of 5, 10, 15 people, do you even know who their significant other is or who their children are? And can you ask them about their weekend and little Johnny's, you know, baseball game and Sally's piano recital? Like, do you care about these people? If so, go learn a little bit about them. And I think that's a point you're driving home with people wanting to feel like they're at least cared for in the basic human decency of I'm a human, not a machine on a factory line, right? And then one thing I tell a lot of people is that if you are recognizing yourself as a leader, people vote with their feet and they do two things with their feet. Okay. They either line up and they follow you with their feet, or they walk away from you and they choose to quit and walk away. So you can tell the type of leader you are based on what people are doing with their feet.
Yeah. I love that. I've never heard of that. Yeah. The way that I see it as a leader, if you look behind you and there's nobody following you, right? So like, again, everybody can call themselves a leader. That's easy. That's really easy to do. But when you look back, who are you motivating? Who are you inspiring? And like you said, are they're going to show you the data is we can look at if we want to throw logic at it and say, are they happy? Are they staying here? Am I losing? Or sometimes it might be staying there just because they have to deal with a crappy boss just because they might have to, you know, they have a mortgage to pay. But just because they're there, that's another thing is that, are they there? Are they really following you? And that's a big, big thing.
No, I think that's a great point. The thing that I think a lot of executives, and you tell me if this is true in your experience, maybe they see like, man, if I care about my people and I start getting to know them and we become besties and all that kind of stuff, they start to feel like the people first approach possibly. And I think there's too many people that think this way, feel like it looks like softness or just there's a lack of accountability. How do you reconcile that line of thinking?
Well, an old boss many years ago, I was going to use the word accused, but maybe that's a little harsh. But she said, Carlos, I think you're too soft on your team. I said, okay, that's fair. And so we looked at all the numbers. Okay, call me soft. That's okay. But let's look at all the analytics and numbers that you're looking at. Sales, they're there. They're exceeding. Attrition, like I had the lowest attrition. People weren't leaving me. Everything was there. So is softness okay? Like, what do you... So you'd rather me be hard on my people and then have my attrition get higher. Which one is it? The whole thing is you could be soft, you could be hard, you could do both, right? Sometimes just because I'm soft doesn't mean that I don't hold my people or didn't hold my people accountable. But the whole thing is accountability may look different for you than Bobby, right? Sometimes when we lead in a kind of a umbrella style, right, my communication to you might be different, you know, to your peer. So in that, sometimes it takes a little bit of softness. But if that other person that has a kind of, I want to say a one-trick pony, but one way of leading, in my the perception might be as softness. But in my perception, my perception of that other person, it's harsh. My perception becomes my reality. It's like, I want to communicate with that individual the way that person, their communication style, and might be perceived as softness. But let me tell you, it's effective.
And you just said the magic word right there. Is it effective? You know, and again, soft and being a quote leader that lets people walk all over them and show up late Different. And turn in projects that aren't complete or on time and stuff like that. Well, that's accountability is just like, hey, you're not meeting the metrics. You're not meeting the standards. We have clearly set boundaries and expectations, and you're not soft when somebody actually gets pushed up against those boundaries and expectations, but you don't run in there, lose your cool and yell at people and get derogatory. But
I mean, you can be soft and firm, right? You can be soft and firm, like whatever terminology you want to use, but it's all about the effectiveness and creating healthy boundaries as well. Like some of the people that I had that I let, they were friends of mine. They're still good friends of mine. But when they were trying to cross that boundary, I would make sure, like, hey, this is the boundary. And that's okay. I think we could do both. And we don't have to be just a leader and that's it. But I like, you could be a leader and a friend and just creating healthy boundaries that you could communicate. And that's also part of leadership alignment as well.
I like that. I like that a lot. So we have this people first mentality. We're trying to care for, take care of our people. And then we, of course, are running a business, some of them very large corporations. We got to make one of those hard business decisions. What does the people first approach look like when a leader has to be faced with one of those hard business decisions?
Look, we have to run a business, right? I think it's having the humanity to do the work before we get to that place. I think it's easy to say, okay, we have to let this person because that person no longer, it's not putting in the time, it's not effective. Okay, that's the reality. We have to let that person go. But too many times I find that we're not investing in our people. And it's really easy to say, well, the person didn't do it. What if it was us that we didn't do a good job as a leader to really have that person shine? That's why if we go to sports analogy, back into Chicago, Phil Jackson and Jordan, what Phil Jackson really did, he was an amazing coach. Nobody can coach Rodman, but he did. Why? Because imagine if he would have said, Rodman doesn't work, we're gonna have to let you go and fire you. Then Michael Jordan and his championships wouldn't have been what they were. But because Phil Jackson is a coach, was a coach, it's like, how do you slow down? And I guarantee you, he coached Rodman very differently than he did Jordan. And I apologize for going into the coaching environment, but a lot of people know those individuals. So how do
Right,
you
right.
adapt? But because I think it's unfair to let people go before we put in the work. But to answer your question, like, yeah, sometimes we have to do that, but we could do it with grace. We could do it with dignity. And also to say, hey, I'm sorry, but we're gonna have to let you go, but also show the work. Like, look, you and I have had this conversation. This is not the first time we're having this conversation. You made the decision, not me, and that's okay. Now I feel good as a leader that I gave him or her the proper tools and they still decided to go a different direction, and I'm okay to move on.
I like that. I don't think people being terminated in any way, fired, anything should ever be a surprise, right? There should
Yes,
be
yeah.
conversations and things leading along that path, development, like you said. Hey, I realize my failure as a leader. I never taught you the system, or I never got you certified. I never, sat down and checked in to make sure that whatever we were doing was sinking in. So, real quick, maybe 30-second answer. So, how does ultimately trust change the way that people perform? Because I think a lot of what you're describing comes around trust and the communication, the response to pressure, things like that. Tell us about
Okay, I
trust.
know I got 30 seconds, but that's more of a 30-minute answer.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I think trust is huge, and I don't think we put enough emphasis on trust. Like, what do we do with our relationship we built, right? We're working on for them to trust us, but somehow we don't want to do that. We want to be different at home that we are at work. Like, people need to trust us, and I think that's a huge one that we're missing on that. So.
Something that we should be constantly trying to build, consciously focusing on. So, we're going to have to
Absolutely.
cut to commercial break here in just a second, but real quick, tell us where to find you. By this point, people realize that you've got what it takes. So, where do they get a hold of you, contact you, things like that.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. You can find me at continuumleaders.com. That's my website. Or you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active. You can send me a DM, Carlos Martin at LinkedIn. Or you can find me on YouTube, Carlos Martin Official as well, where I try to put some content about leadership and so forth.
That's perfect. I'm sure people are going to be checking you out. And welcome back from the break. We're going to keep the momentum going in this conversation. I feel like we're almost still getting warmed up. And Carlos has been really hitting us home with a lot of things that we need to know, need to do, and really just change our perspective. And we talked very briefly about trust, as that is something that you need to be consciously focusing on and working towards consistently, because you have to build trust in your business, not just in other areas of your life, as Carlos so eloquently said. So, Carlos, let's jump back in the conversation here. Let's talk about things that are happening behind the scenes in leadership, maybe even in the minds of their leaders, or sometimes under the surface that we can't always get to, but there's a lot of activity there. So, Let's talk about maybe some conversations that senior leaders need to have, but rarely feel like they can have them because maybe it doesn't feel safe to say things out loud.
Yeah, I think the number one thing is they're just not having the conversations, right? So it's difficult if they need to have conversations, but they're just not having the conversations. They want to, in my experience, right? Because it's not about me. It's like you start to data gather after you talk to so many leaders, directors, executive C-suite, you start to see it. It's like, oh, wow, it's pretty clear. Is that they're not having conversations. They're not having conversations with the teams. They're not having conversations with themselves. I know it sounds a bit meta, but they're just not going in deep and really talking to themselves. And that's when we come in and we slow them down and say, hey, what conversations should you be having? Because if we're having the same conversations of, okay, we just got to go, look at the numbers, which is great. We need to do that, but how do we slow down and just have any conversation? And any those conversations may look like, so to answer your questions, like, well, how do we dig deep? I think you use the term under the hood, right? It's to look inward. It's kind of like how we started the conversation. We're what's next? We want to go into do, opposed to what do you want to be? Not what do you want to do? Who do you want to be? Right? So so instead of being, and I used this a couple of days ago, we're human beings, not human doers. Right, because we're doing and doing and doing, which is great, but we need to be human beings first to understand ourselves. And the thing is that whatever you want to do, whatever you wanted to do last year may be different than what you want to do today, or maybe 5 years. You might still be working on whatever you wanted 5, 10 years, and that's been working for you. But a lot of times, like, hey, you might want something different. And that's the reason why a lot of times they come to me is like, oh, there's lack of fulfillment. Or it's just not jiving for them anymore. Like, well, it's because you're working on that. You say you were going to climb that mountain. You've been climbing that mountain for the last 5 years, which is great, but you already got there. Now which mountain do you want to climb? But now you have to, right? But a lot, you can't just keep going. You need strategy, and so forth. So it's just really having conversations to really get to know themselves a bit better.
Yeah, I think, like you said, at the very beginning, there's all kinds of layers. We're always constantly, as leaders, looking to fix things, put out fires, problem solvers, very, even if it's soft skills like coaching, teaching, and training, we're very hands-on as far as getting the work done. And, a lot of people say that leadership, true leadership, is lonely, right? Your circle gets smaller and smaller, almost to the point where leadership can become isolating. It doesn't have to be, though, but that's just what we're taught. So, like entrepreneurs and these executives that are getting to the top of the organization and top of what they do, they feel like they're becoming isolated. And you feel like also dealing inside what types of questions help them break through that to have the conversations that are needed to avoid feeling isolated.
Well, yeah, it is, especially the higher the rank or the higher they up, let's say in the C-suite, it is pretty lonely up there because I see it and I hear it, I witness it. And I think a big part of it is they're supposed to have all the answers, right? So if there's any doubt, any imposter syndrome within them, then is that the right leader to have up on top? When this person is questioning themselves, that's not the person that we want. But that's not the reality. The reality is we are human beings. There is going to be doubt. There is going to be fears. There is going to be the imposter syndrome. But so how do we have a conversation? So I think is, the same way we have a board of advisors within corporate and having our personal board of advisors to be able to have that conversation, the dialogue, to have an emotional ally to saying, maybe the CEO can be talking to a friend or again, the emotional ally said, man, I'm a little lost here. I don't know what in the world I'm doing. Now, they might know what they're doing, but there's a little bit of doubt, and that's okay. But it is pretty lonely because you're not supposed to be vulnerable up there. You're supposed to have all the answers. And the reality is, we just don't, but we can't let our guard down. Otherwise, it's going to be perceived as weakness.
I think you're making great points because, the people I speak to and coach to, I've personally felt it myself that, well, I can't walk into the room and say, hey, I don't know. I don't have that answer. Everybody's depending on me and I'll look weak. I'll lose credibility. My leadership capital will go down. So I have to have all the armors. I can't let there be a chink in the armor, as they say, right? Because then, people will swoop in for, they'll doubt themselves, they'll doubt the system, they'll doubt the company, and we can get in our own head, get in our own way in doing a lot of that stuff. And so a lot of leaders really just never open that can, but they need to have all kinds of advisors themselves, peers. Peer groups are a great way to get that done. Having connections outside of the workplace, whether it's in churches or community groups or even hobby teams and things like that, that can make you feel less isolated. And if you get with other C-suite executives and entrepreneurs that are having these same systems, could they just not tap each other on the shoulder and say, hey, what did you do in this situation? What did you when you felt like you didn't know what to do, or you had, and they can network and elevate each other.
Yeah, that's a great point. And a lot of times I encourage people to do that. And that's kind of the, when I say they're a lonely world, that's kind of the only people they can talk to because they could understand each other. And it's almost like a place of no judgment. When my clients come to me, there's a place of no judgment for being seen and heard. So they have the same thing, but it's just really small of a group for them where they're not going to be judged because now that other CEO, CMO, you whatever, three-letter acronym in the C-suite, you want to put they have that, they have those individuals, but it's a very, very small group. The other thing is, why not change the culture? We'll stay in the leadership in the C-suite for a sec and say, what's wrong with say, you know what? I'm not sure, but that's why I have Bob. He's the expert in this. Tell us. Like, it's okay not to know, but if we start to work on that culture within inside, little by little, to be able, imagine if a CEO comes to you and says, you know what, I'm not sure. People might be thrown off a little bit, but if you say with confidence and say, yeah, but that's the reason why I hired Susie. Susie, tell us a little bit more. I want to rely on you. Because a lot of times, if you're thinking, think about it like a GC, a general contractor, do they know how to do everything? No, they're the maestro, right? So, if I put a GC to do the flooring, the roof, they're not going to know. It's kind of the same thing, but somehow we expect the GC and the CEO to know everything about it. Otherwise, it's weakness. So if we show that strength and really communicate and change that culture, then I think we're onto something.
I love that maestro one too is the usually the maestro knows how to play at least one or two instruments pretty good, but there's like 27 instruments in a full piece orchestra, and he doesn't know them all, but he knows precisely how they're going to come together, and he knows exactly how to make that harmony and drive the rhythm and drive the beat, make somebody loud, make somebody soft. And if somebody said, hey, I'm having trouble, I used to play the oboe,
Oh,
and so
nice, nice.
I'm having trouble hitting that low G, my pinky's not doing it. Well, he's not going to know the exact fix and what oil to use on that little key of the instrument, but he's going to be like, hey, this oboe player expert over here is going to help you. So I think your metaphor was literally spot on, and we
Oh,
need to
thank you.
introduce ourselves to our teams as, hey guys, I'm more of a maestro. I'm not going to have all the answers, but I have assembled a team to where we can get all the answers, and I know how to find the answers with you or for you on the grand scheme of things, and then teach them how to find the answers themselves amongst their teams as well would be a pretty slick high-level leadership move.
Yeah, there you go. And that's a sustainable approach, right? And yeah, it dude, being the maestro, I remember I've never played an instrument, but I love watching like the Ella Philharmonic, Gustavo Dudamel, to be able to see him do his thing with his crazy hair. And it's just to be able to control the environment, like that's power. That's beautiful to be able to do that and conduct the symphony, but imagine to be conducting your stakeholders. That's impressive.
So it sounds like a lot of what leaders have going on in their head is maybe they've got a little bit of their own thoughts, their own selves are getting in the way. Maybe there's a personal narrative there that they're telling themselves or that they're living by. Maybe some of those personal narratives involve old assumptions from who they used to be or a little farther down the mountain from what they've climbed. How do leaders help shape the way for their new decisions under pressure while battling these personal narratives and old assumptions?
Yeah, that's a great one. Personal narrative is something you've been working on for a long time, right? Maybe since you were a kid, maybe back in college. But think about it, those personal narratives might be outdated. They might have expired. And so somehow we want to use the same formula, the same algorithm, to life, when we were in college. And it doesn't really quite work anymore. So I think the personal narrative is something that I work really hard, not only for myself, but for the people that I'm coaching, because that's, I want to say the number one, but that's top three. And what they're telling themselves. What is that story that you're telling others about yourself? Or better yet, what is that story you're telling yourself about yourself? So we have that personal narrative. And the funny thing is that personal narrative is really difficult to dismiss. One of the things that I found is that why am I going to change? I found success. I have money. I have the cars. I've got a few bucks in the bank. Why am I going to change the way that I am? That doesn't make logical sense. But if you really think about it, it's like, yeah, it got me here, which is great. But it doesn't mean that we have to dismiss or erase the past. Be appreciative of where you are. But now, okay, now in the new direction that I want to go, does that still serve me? Does that still apply? And if not, sometimes we need to retweak it, erase it, completely change it, whatever that is. But somehow we want to grasp onto it because we found success.
Yeah, I love that. And that's a good spot for me to jump in here. And we're going to cut to commercial break. But I think what you're saying is that you're really helping the leader see what they're not able to see alone or to see something that's outdated and bring that to the surface. So we're going to explore some more of that right after this commercial break. And we're going to be entering our final stretch of the hour. So stay tuned for the big finish. We'll be right back with more Pivotal Change. Welcome back to Pivotal Change, and I hope you know where to find us. You go to nowmedia.tv or nowmediatv.com, and you can download the app. You can find all your favorite episodes and shows. You can even get the podcast version of everything. That is your one-stop shop for bilingual
no lectures,
culture,
ready to get
news,
recognized.
events, leadership, and influence. So go to nowmedia.tv, and you can get everything you want. That television broadcast happens there all the time, and you have everything accessible under the sun that that network produces. So we're going to hit back here with Carlos, and we're going to keep this questions rocking and rolling because I want to give you as much microphone time as possible. Your wisdom is fantastic. And we talked about trust, we talked about the self-reflection, having conversations, surrounding yourself with peers, looking at your old self versus your new self. So now I want to look maybe to the future just a little bit. So as you look to the future of work, why do you believe this bringing humanity back into the workplace matters so much right now, maybe more than ever?
Yeah, the new workforce that's here that's been coming in, I know we talked a little bit about this, is that they really want to be seen and want to be heard. They want to, more than that, they want to feel part of something. They don't want to just go out there and collect a paycheck. They want to feel part of it, something. And yeah, having stock options is one way to feel, especially if you're working for SpaceX, right?
No
But
kidding.
to be able to be part of the team, to feel to be part of the team, to be able to say, hey, I'm not sure, but Bob, what do you think? Right? And forget, we're not in the C-suite anymore. We're just talking about it with your team to empower them. I think the future is we need more of that. So now we're going in more into EQ, really. Have the emotional intelligence to be able to have the conversations. The one thing that I see is that a lot of leaders don't know how to have those conversations. They don't have the emotional literacy. They don't feel comfortable. They don't feel the need. So the future is we need more of that. Someone that does feel comfortable, that could have leadership, that could be strong and yet soft, and be able to pivot and whatever the stakeholders might need at that time.
Yeah, I think you're bringing some heavy hitting points. The need to be heard, seen as a person, is going to be a recurring theme with this generation. I'm an old millennial, so all the way millennial on down, we want a little bit more of being seen and heard. And you don't have to do things where you just say everybody in the room gets a voice and it's on equal standing and we're going to consider all options. That's not realistic. Something that we've done, and I've helped coach other people, and I really want your feedback on this one, is we give everybody the opportunity to have feedback, but we preface it in the onboarding, right? In the onboarding, we say, hey, we want your opinion. We're going to want to see if you have a different solution from wherever the heck it is you've come from, that we may not be looking outside the box. And now you come in and you bring a little tool. I said, but you've got to try it our way first. Good, legitimate, actual attempts of trying it our way first. Then, if you see a problem, please raise your hand and speak up because we're going to want to examine it and possibly fix it. And then other times we say things like, hey, I want to hear everybody's opinion, but just because we ask for it doesn't mean we're automatically going to accept the opinion, but we just want the information. We just want the spectrum of knowledge. How do you respond to those approaches? Is there tweaking need to be done? Are people doing the right thing by doing that? Give me your expert feedback on that.
Well, I love what you said. I think the only missing part is that we're not having that conversation. We're not communicating that. The expectation might, or not the expect, yeah, I guess the expectation could be there to say, I'm going to do the onboarding, make sure they learn the way that we do it. And just because we ask for your feedback doesn't necessarily we're going to do that. Why not communicate that? I think we think about it, but we're not communicating. So that's where the misalignment. So I want to go back a little bit onto the onboarding. What I see with many companies, what they do is they do an amazing job with onboarding. And guess what? After that, crickets, right? Or there's a great onboarding, whatever tool they're using, a personality assessment, a desk, or you name it, and then they don't use it anymore. There's no stickiness. So if you're not going to have the stickiness to the onboarding, why even have the onboarding? So it becomes a checklist. And the other thing is to do the onboarding and then to be able to have the communication to say, like you said, like I will love for you to learn it our way. And we're not going to push it on you, but I really want you to learn it. There's a reason why we do it because this is what we found most effective. But at some point, I want you to put your own stamp, your own voice, but just give me one sec for you to learn it the way that we learn it. And after that, you could do it. Just give me a week, give me two, give me a month. That is a very different conversation than then just do it and have the expectation. So if you have that conversation with someone's going to say, okay, I feel heard. I feel seen. I just have to kind of learn it their way. And then that is very different.
I think everything you said is a bit different than the way most people are running their companies these days. I know a handful out there that are doing some things very well. So how do leaders, maybe an actual step-by-step process, or at least getting us kicked down the path, create these more honest human workplaces, without losing focus, without losing, speed and reactivity and accountability? What's maybe the first one or two steps they can do to create this more honest environment?
Yeah, I think the one thing that comes, it doesn't have to be this or that. It doesn't have to be either we work on the KPIs, I'm a true leader or I'm soft. It doesn't have to be we work on this or I work. It could be both and. That is my new term that I humanity back into the workplace and both and is something that I say over and over because somehow, like for example, I could have my cake and eat it too. Whoever came up with you can't have your cake and eat it too, that is a person that I don't want in my team. That is old way of thinking because we could do both, right? Whether you think you can, you think you can't, you're right. So we start to put an and on everything. We are going to find a way to be able to do the both and. But it starts with creating that space, like I talked about earlier. And like you mentioned someone, your colleague, to say, do you know their spouses? Do you know their kids? Sometimes it starts off with simple things. We want to complicate things, like get to know your people, have conversations, go out for a glass of wine after work. And if somebody wants to talk about work, like, nope, we're not talking about work today. That's it. And then it takes practice. And when I work with leaders, sometimes the stakeholders are like, what's going on with so and so? Like now he's talking to us, he's asking us questions, he's taking us to wine. What's behind it? It's going to be a little odd at first, right?
Right.
Because they're not, that person hasn't built the trust, but it takes a little time. So by doing that little by little, then all of a sudden your stakeholders like, you know what? This guy, William guy, I'm seeing a different way, and I really like it, and I really respect it. And little by little, it's not going to be a switch. You're not going to buy their trust. You're not going to earn their trust right away. It's going to take a little bit of time.
Yeah, I really like it. I'm going to emphasize, you said it's not a light switch, right? It's not something that you just click on and off and it starts to work. It's a progress, there's growth, it develops. Humans, we constantly are moving through uncertainty. The only thing that we know is going to change is that there's going to be more change, right? And so you are having these genuine conversations. Like you said, yeah, go out for a glass of wine after work. These conversations are truly what's helping people move through uncertainty and move through change, which the only thing that is certain is that there's going to be uncertainty. And the only thing that we know about change is that it's inevitable. Are these some of the crucial steps in moving through those two things?
Yeah, absolutely. Think about, back in the days, I don't hear that often anymore, but how much business was done while playing golf? Right? It's kind of the same thing. Was it on the boardroom? No, like, no, let's go out there. When you have different cultures in Asia, you can't just go out there and start doing business. You got to work on
Right.
that trust. They got to like you and really trust you and who you are, right? Your values. But somehow we lost track of that. Now it's all about what can you do for me lately? So I want to go back to analog, especially in the world of AI. We're going to go super fast. So I want to not necessarily over-index, but just to go to the old ways of doing business and really connecting with people. So yeah, my thing is go full analog, connect with the people, glass of wine, playing golf.
Yep.
And I think there's a lot more work that happens off of work.
Yep, I like that. Some of the more successful companies I've seen, they do a big corporate event every year and it's just pure fun, right? It's pure fun. They go rent ATVs and go mudding. They go play airsoft and shoot each other up in an airsoft game, or they go do escape rooms or whatever it is, and it's just pure fun. And then they eat meals regularly. There's a once a month meal where it's just like we're just eating the lunch. It's a long lunch break that day. Everybody's eating food. So let me ask you this question, pivoting from that. Last question of the episode. If you're just going to give us one thing that a leader needs to be asking themselves before they try to make their next move, what's the first thing they should ask themselves?
I'm gonna go a bit deep here, and it has nothing to do with work. It's themselves. What makes you feel alive?
What makes you
That's
feel?
gonna tell
I
you
love
a
that a lot.
lot about where you are, about you. Because again, we're not going into the human doer, we're going into the human being. What makes you feel alive? And that's gonna tell you a lot about where you are, the chapter of what you want or don't want.
Like that. That's perfect. Well, if people want to know how to get to the bottom of what makes them alive, they can come talk to you. Where do they find you, Carlos?
Carlos at continuumleaders.com. You can send me an email or continuumleaders.com, our website, or send me a DM on LinkedIn, or follow some of the content that I have on my YouTube, Carlos Martin Official YouTube.
I love it. Thank you so much for coming on the show. You've been fantastic.
Thank you for having me.
Everybody else out there watching, I want you to go out into the world. I want you to see the change and be the change. We'll catch you right here next time on Pivotal Change.